morning, and thank you for standing by. As a reminder, this call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Ms. Bagot, you may now begin.
Thanks, Valerie. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 2011 RTC and Jazz Open Mic Series. The topic today is work item and process customization. My name is Stephanie Bagot, and I work for IBM Rational as a technical support engineer for Rational Team Concert and Jazz. Today, our speaker is Andre Winans. Andre has been an RTC change management architect since 2010 after having been the work item component lead for more than 4 years. Before joining the Jazz project, he played an active role in the Eclipse project since its inception, working on the Eclipse platform, the Java development tooling, and bringing Eclipse to the Mac platform. We will be having a web conference today with presentation material. To join, please go to www.webdialogs.com/join. That's webdialogs.com/join. Conference ID 3133836. Again, that conference ID is 3133836.
God, there's a huge spider in here.
Andre will be sharing his knowledge throughout the hour, but all lines are open, so please feel free to jump in and share your questions and ideas. Again, everyone's lines are open, so if you're not speaking, please go on mute. And now I will introduce our speaker, Andre. Go ahead, Andre.
Thanks, Stephanie, for this introduction. Welcome, everybody, on this open mic series. And I'm actually interested in hearing your ideas of what I should do today. I'm prepared to give a presentation about work item and process customization, but since this is an open mic series, if you prefer that we just have a question and answer session, that's fine with me as well. And in addition, I can even demonstrate features that you want to see. So I can do all three of these things. Is there any feedback already what I should do?
Andrew, this is Steven. I do have a couple of questions related to the, you know, the master project area process configuration and the impact of the change, the different template type that's being used by the master project area and, you know, the inherited project area. So if you have time to cover those topics, that'd be great.
Okay, I will take notes here. So I will go into details of that.
I do
else?
Have, you know, I have tried something related to this this area. So I do have some information that I would like to share with you and see if you can maybe give me some explanation or pointers.
Okay. Yeah. I think first, before I will start with some presentation and maybe demo, I would like to collect some of these things that I should cover in my presentation. Anything else that I should cover?
Kathy, I see your hand is raised on the web conference. Did you have something Andre wanted to discuss?
Yes, actually, we're just starting. We're doing proof of concept testing, and we're just very interested in seeing how that whole work item process, as far as customization and getting our types of templates into Jazz and for RRC development.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. This is all like brand new to us. I mean, we kind of hit the ground running, and now we're at a point where, okay, now how can we customize this to do what we would like to do it with it?
Okay, yes. So this is kind of basic work item and process customization that you are interested in?
Yes. I mean, okay. We've got certain templates that we use, and we're kind of forcing RRC to put things the way we want them, you know, just by numbering them in order, but my understanding is there are ways that we can import our own templates.
Mm-hmm. So I'm covering RTC, not RRC. Yeah.
I'm sorry, RRC. Oh.
I'm covering RTC.
Today. Oh, RTC today. Okay, fine.
So it's not RRC.
Okay.
Anything else that I should cover?
Yes, this is Fred Carter.
Hello.
It's good to see you again. Couple of, just in some terms of some of the basics of customization, you know, just take us through, if you could, take us through a typical issues management process where you're customizing issues, defects, and user stories.
Okay.
One other thing which is quite interesting, when we dive deep into the work items and the save work items, it's like all the preconditions, all the different options available there, and obviously you can't go through them all today, but where all the documentation with regards to that would be, how to use these preconditions and so forth.
Mm-hmm. So this is Fred again to follow up on that, and particularly with those three items, at least those three item types, work item types, particularly the, you know, a typical approvals process or workflow.
Okay. So I think these four items are already enough for 1 hour, so I have to see whether I'm able to go into details of all of them. So since one of the items was really basic customization, I will just start here. So can you see my slides, my first slide right now?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So just before I start this short presentation, I'm basing my slides and all the demo on RTC version 3.0, IFIX 1. So I'm not covering anything of the upcoming features of the next release that we will ship later this year. So this is really just 3.0 functionality, just to make clear what you can do and what you cannot do. So it's 3.0 RTC functionality. So the scope of customization is shown on this first slide. So we have various components in RTC: process, work items, planning, dashboards, source code management, build, and all of these components are customizable. But as the title of this presentation already makes clear, that today's focus is really on the most important customization, at least in my perspective, that is process and work items. So at least work items is the component that has the biggest customization options, or the biggest number of options for customization available. So it needs more explanation than the other components that we have. So let's just dive into the process of customization, and this actually starts typically in the process component. So these customizations that you typically do when creating a new project area that do not have anything to do with work items are things that have to do with roles, with overall configurations that you do to set up your project, with timelines, with iterations, and with, for example, permissions for various operations that you can do. And maybe I can now switch to RTC. So you can see now the RTC 3.0 workbench. I created a new project area, open mic, and this project area is the kind of example that I will use today. So I opened the project area, and now you can see the project area editor, which is kind of...
Hello? Excuse me?
Yes?
Sorry to interrupt. Can everybody see your presentation? Because For me, it's saying the conference has not yet been started by the moderator.
I can see it.
Fred, I'll send you a link to the web conference ID. Maybe you have the wrong one.
Okay, thanks.
So I just enlarged the project area editor, which is kind of the most important thing that you will see today, because it's the place where all the customizations take place. And this project area has several tabs, and we will go to the work item specific areas later. First, just a quick introduction of the things that you can do here, which is just create a project area. You would use normally a process template, and I don't want to go into the process templates right here. Just the things that were mentioned in the initial feedback I got. One question was about a master and slave.
Yes, this is Stephen. I actually have some questions related to this. You know, for 3.0 CCN, when you create a project area,
mm-hmm.
it gives you three options. The first one is this project area is going to be standalone. The second one is this project area is going to be sharing some of the, you know, sharing the process configuration from a master project area configuration. The third one is this project area process configuration is going to be used by other people, by other project areas. So,
yes.
One of the things. Let me open up with one of the problems that I encountered. Because, you know, in 3.0, it has introduced a new process template called traditional planning,
mm-hmm.
formal. I forgot the exact name, but basically it's a template for traditional planning for, you know, waterfall type of project management.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is I create a project area and using that template.
Mm-hmm.
And then I make that template. I select one of the options to make that template, make that project area one of those master project area.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, I create another project area, but this time I'm using the simple team process template. But when I'm given the options to choose whether this is going to be a standalone, it's going to be inherit some of the process configuration from another project area, I want this project area to inherit the process configuration from the previous master project area that I've just created.
Yes.
So everything worked okay. Like, you know, it let me take, you know, for example, the role definition from the master project area, because, you know, the simple team process template only give you one role, which is the team member.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But the formal process template gives you many other roles, like, for example, architect or whatever, things
yep.
like that. So once I select this project area, my simple team project area will inherit the master project area configuration, I start seeing the additional roles from the master project area configuration. So that means this does work. So the parent and child relationship does get established. But the problem I'm encountering now is after I finish initialization of the project area, my child project area, and go to some of those tabs, like, for example, go to the plan tabs.
Then you have problems. Are you using 3.0, I assume?
Yes, I'm actually using
okay.
3.0.
I think in 3.0, the master-slave process sharing mechanism is kind of limited. And I think one good advice here is for the slave project areas, do not use any of the normal project templates, but use the uninitialized, or the, I think it's called, I have to check, It's called something like empty process template. So master-slave sharing works in 3.0 only if the slave really has an empty process template. So if you're using a process template with its own definition, then merging both the master and the slave together does not work.
Okay.
So you just use the empty or unconfigured, I think the name is unconfigured, process template for the slave, and then you should not see those problems.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, great. Thanks.
So just for the others who did not know about this master-slave process sharing, these three radio buttons here in the process sharing section enable this feature that we introduced in 3.0. So the old behavior is the first radio button, and the second radio button can be used to mark this project area, for example, as a project area that is used as a master. And then you can have other project areas, and then you would click the third radio box to mark them as a slave, and then you would specify what is the master. And this slave, master-slave relationship really means slave inherit the process specification from the master. So that makes it possible to have a single process specification, and this is applied automatically to all the slave project areas that you have within a single repository. So this process sharing does not work across repositories yet in the 3.0 version.
Andre, is it just one level? Just one master,
just
one slave?
Just one level, yes.
The slaves cannot have slaves below them.
No, because in that case, a slave would be a master, and this is not possible with this radio box. So this is kind of a limitation. I'm not sure whether process will remove this limitation in the future, but right now it's limited just to one level.
So Andrea, regarding your comment for the merge, my understanding is that right now you cannot do the merge, right? So
yes.
The slave has to be empty in order for it to inherit the configuration, the process configuration from the master.
Yes.
Is there any plan to support the merge in the future release?
In the future release, later this year, it will be possible to really override certain sections in the slave. So it's kind of possible to specify, for example, additional work item types in a slave in addition to the types you get from the master. But still, again, having a completely different project template in a slave that is kind of in conflict with the master, that will not work. So we are not planning to support that.
Okay.
So I think the real model is...
Quick question. Is it possible you can decrease your resolution to make the screen a little bit bigger?
This means...
Fred, you can click on in the top left-hand corner full size, and that will make your resolution bigger.
I think this one is good.
Okay, that'll do it. And the other thing is, just real quickly, I'm a little bit confused about what you're referring to as master and slave. Wondering if you could just take a minute to back up and describe that again.
Oh, so I think one problem with our project area architecture was always that if you have lots of projects, it's difficult to share a single project process specification across different project areas. So it was only possible by copying the process specification from one project area to another. In 3.0, we introduced a process sharing mechanism that makes use of the concept of a master project area and slave project areas. So now it's possible to create to create a single project area that works as a master. So there is the definition of the process. And then you have other project areas that are kind of tagged as slaves. And these slaves inherit all the process specifications from the master. So you can edit the process specification in one place in the master, and it is automatically inherited by all the slaves automatically. So it's no longer necessary to copy this information manually. It's kind of automatically distributed to all the slaves. And the process sharing section in the project area editor, this is here in the left bottom corner, has the options for doing this.
So if I understand what you're saying, Andre, is I would create a master view for like a senior level executive to be able to evaluate all of the sub-projects that are underneath them.
No, this is a different use case, I think.
Okay.
It's really just you can share the process specification that you only had for project areas. You can share that now for multiple project areas. So there is a single source of the process configuration.
Okay.
So, Andre, this is Stephen again. I have one further question here, because one of my clients, they've been using RTC for quite a long time. So they were using the RTC 2.x. But as you're aware that in RTC 2.x, the formal project management template is not introduced. It's only introduced until we release RTC 3.0. So when they migrate from RTC 2.0 to RTC 3.0, do they really want to utilize the functionality, especially the reporting functionality from the formal project management template? So what they did is essentially what I was mentioned in the beginning of this call, is that so they created a master project area using the formal project management template, and then they migrate all the existing project area to 3.0. But after the migration, they make those project area, those existing 2.x project area, slave of that master project area. So some of the project works fine, like works successfully, like they are able to see the functionality that's only available from the formal project management template. But some of them doesn't work. Like they've encountered errors, you know, different errors.
Excuse me, is this a consultancy or an education session?
So in that case, based on what you're saying, then this is not configured. They're like, this is not supported. This is not a supported environment.
I think I cannot go into the details of these problems that you are seeing. So I think we have to discuss these issues offline.
Okay, sorry about that. Sure.
Okay, so this is just the first part of projects setup with regard to master-slave projects. So this was kind of a new feature introduced in 3.0. Expect to see more and better functionality in upcoming releases. So other things you can do in the project area editor is setting up timelines for your project. You would normally get some predefined timelines and iterations from the process template that you had initially selected. So if you create a project area, for example, with the Scrum template, then this is populated, like you can see this here on the screen, with sprints and backlog and the typical iteration types that you would expect from a Scrum process. If you want to introduce other types, other timelines, you can go in here to do this. So this is an important part of process customization.
I have a quick question back on the process, Sharon.
Yes.
When they share the process, that doesn't necessarily mean that when you have a master and slave, that if the two projects are linked, that users from one project can see data that's in the other project, right?
No,
it's just that
no.
The processes are shared.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So the isolation that you have between project is still there. That does, it's not affected by sharing at all.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, so other things that you would introduce in the project area editor are, for example, roles, and these are still process artifacts. Since our focus today is really work items, I would now want to make this jump to go from process customization to work item customization, because this is the most interesting aspect of customization in general. And the entry point for this is the process configuration tab. This tab is showing you a structure of all the different areas where you can do customization. And here is, for example, the place where you can introduce roles. Here are two important subsections. One is project configuration and one is team configuration. This is really an important distinction between these two sections. The project configuration section has entries for all the things that are typically global to the whole project. And the team configuration section has entries or sub-items, configuration options that are that you can customize per team. So the idea behind is that you can set up your whole project. You can set up things that are fundamental to your whole project, like, for example, what types of work items the project supports. You can do this in the project configuration setting, and then there are other things you can configure based on your team structure. So you can have different, for example, permissions, as you can see here, or operation behavior. You can have different permissions and behaviors for your teams that are working within a project. So this is an important distinction that you have to make here. So the first thing I would like to show is the fundamental configuration you would do when, for example, introducing new work item types. That is something that you probably would like to do if the given process templates that we ship with RTC 3.0 do not contain the types that you would like to use. Or if a type, for example, does not have all the attributes that you need. So that's kind of the first thing you would typically do when doing work item customization for a given project. So the important section here is the sub-item types and attributes. And this is now looking a little different from the customization editor that we had in 2.0. So we try to bring things that belong together, we try to bring them together on a single tab. This tab is a bit crowded, but it's really the important tab where you configure what work item types you have in your project area. And just to make this clear again, all these things that you can configure here under work items, for example, there are things like enumerations and attribute customizations and workflows and editor presentations. All these things apply to the whole project. So you cannot configure these things per team. That means all teams working within a project will use the same work item types, for example. So this is kind of a decision that we made to make things simpler that within a project area, you can only define new types globally for all teams that are using that project area. So the types and attributes is the central editor to edit your work item types, and you can see here the list of different types that, for example, the Scrum template defines. So there are the usual defects, tasks, and stories, but there are other things like the epics and adoption items and impediments. And if you click on one of these types, you can here assign names, icons. You can define a workflow that is kind of the state transition that a work item makes if you change it, for example, from one state to another. We can edit. We come to that later. One important subsection here is the attribute section. This lists all the attributes of a work item type. And again, we'll go to the defect work item type. And now you can see here the list of work item attributes. And one important option here is to only show the custom attribute. The important thing here is to understand that in RTC, all work items have a certain set of built-in attributes. You cannot remove them. They are built in all the work item types that we support. And then, on top of them, you can add additional custom attributes. And sometimes you only want to see the custom attributes, and then you can just filter them. So, for example, in this case, I was just introducing for the defect work item type two new attributes that are, for example, important for my company, an attribute where you can specify the platform defect was detected, and you can specify, for example, what browser the problem occurred. So these are two attributes that I have introduced on top of the existing Scrum template that I'm using for this project area. To add more attributes, you would just go to the Add button here, create a new attribute by using a name. You can pick from a long list of types, of built-in types, and you can specify other things like, for example, default values and so on. I cannot go into all these details. There is information on wikis and in articles available for how to do this. One important thing here is when introducing new custom attributes, then the enumeration attribute type is something that is used heavily. So there is a complete section in the work item customization tree here on the left-hand side to introduce these enumerations. So I introduced for my new attributes that I introduced, the platform attribute and the browser attribute, I have introduced two enumerations with the list of the different platform types and the list of different browsers. You can reuse these enumerations for different attributes then later on.
Question?
Yes?
I'm sorry, I must have missed it. You can define your own attributes and of different types, but that browser attribute was sort of had to have been built in, right?
No.
How did you do that?
I would just add, for example, I can create a new attribute here. The ID would just be 2, and now I can just select the type and the enumeration. I would just select here an enumeration that I have defined previously. So you introduce a new enumeration that lists just the numbers, the values of the enumeration, and then you can access it through the drop-down menu and assign it to the new introduced attribute.
Okay, but that browser was predefined, isn't that list?
No, it was not predefined. It was just defined before my presentation today.
Oh, so then in that case, then how does it capture the browser that the person is working in?
Ah, there is no automatic mechanism right now to assign this browser attribute automatically. So you would have to set this manually.
Okay, you enter it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. I guess I was in dreamland here. I thought it was actually could capture the actual browser.
Yes.
I'm sure a lot of QA groups would like that.
Yes.
But okay.
This is available in the next release.
It is. Okay,
yes.
Great.
There is a mechanism that automatically guesses the browser and fills it automatically.
So it can fill in the environment. I'm sure browser's not the only thing that would be available, right? Some other environmental stuff too?
I think right now it's an extensible mechanism. It's a mechanism to be able to specify default values. That's kind of the underlying mechanism. And we have one example that tries to do this, I think, for browsers.
Super. Hey, one question, and I'll let you continue. This is Fred again. At some point, when you're at a checkpoint, could you also demonstrate, like when someone like myself comes into an environment to a setup, they want to know what the current setup is. What are all the attributes that was customized for work items and other things? Is there some way to print that information or get it?
No. I think the only thing you could do is actually look into the source. So whatever you do through the UI is kind of reflected in the underlying XML, but there is no mechanism to print this in some nice way, no.
Okay, no way to print your customization.
No, that's not possible.
Okay, all right, thanks.
Quick question.
One more question about the enumerations. Randy, do you have any... Do you have any way on the enumerations to retrieve the values for the enumerations outside of the process definitions, perhaps in a side XML file?
Right now, this is not possible.
Okay.
We are working on this right now because it's a request that we hear every day. So. We are working on this with high priority, but it is neither in this 3.0 release nor is it planned for the next release, but we are already working on it. So we see the importance of that.
This is Robert. One other follow-up question on the enumerations.
Mm-hmm.
So like in ClearQuest, if you created like a constant list, you used in enumerations, that information, was it like retroactive, or if you had a bunch of records that were using a set of enumerations previously and then you changed the enumeration list or edited it, it wouldn't go back and change retroactively the values there. Do these behave the similar way? Like if you started with an enumeration high, medium, low, and then you decided to change the values from high, medium, low to, you know, critical, urgent, not important or something, would it retroactively change the previous values, or is it something that you'd have to go back and change yourself?
The question here is, what actually did you change? Because for all these things like enumeration values, we make a distinction between the internal ID and the display name that the user is seeing. So if you just change the display name, for example, then the data hasn't there is no need to update the data because it's just an output-only thing. If you really introduce new values, for example, severity, you add another severity level, then adding is not a problem at all. You don't have to update anything. If you really replace something, so you remove an existing value and replacing it, including its ID, by a new value, then you would have to update. In this case, the system will automatically warn you and will help you with a query to find all those work items that are using this updated value. You can see this here in the link that I'm highlighting right now. So you can check attribute usages in the repository, and there is something similar for enumeration values. So you can find things that you are planning to remove or to replace, and it will help you to find the instances of work items so that you can update.
Okay.
But I think the better strategy is always not to remove any of these definitions if you are having work items that are using these definitions. It's always better just to add things, or it's better just to change the display name, but keep the ID behind it intact.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so I just showed how to introduce, for example, two attributes to an existing work item type. The next thing that we have to do is we have to add these attributes to the presentation so that these things become visible, because just introducing new attributes will not automatically make them appear in the UI. So for this, there is this concept of editor presentations, which is kind of a very simple way to specify the UI for a work item in the editor. And this the idea behind is pretty simple. We do not have in 3.0 a Visivic way of editing the UI. This will be available in the next version. In 3.0, you have to edit these things in a tree, and the tree represents the overall structure of the work item editor. I can quickly go to a slide that shows these. For example, here you can see the work item editor here, and the work item editor consists of different sections, and within sections you have attributes, and then you have tabs within the editor. So there are kind of four levels of UI elements that are nested. On the first level are editors, then the tabs, then the sections, and within the sections there are attribute presentations. And you do not really specify the layout of all these things. This is predefined, but you can specify what attributes are shown in what section, and what section is going in what tab, and what tabs are used to build an editor. So you're really editing the overall structure, but not so much the editor layout. The idea behind it is we want to be independent from the output media. So if you're using the rich client, the Eclipse-based client, for example, the layout will be adapted to the rich client. If you're using the web UI, you will see a different layout. But the information that is shown is in both cases the same. And what information is shown is relying on the same underlying description. That's kind of this hierarchy that you can specify here in the editor presentations editor. So what you are seeing here, for example, is the editor presentation that is used as the default. And what I want to do is to add the platform and the browser attribute, and I want to have them in the details section on the overview tab. So what I did here was just I added browser and severity platform and browser directly under filed against. And the overall effect of this is that the editor then shows platform and browser as two enumeration presentations within the details section on the overview tab of the editor. So it's pretty simple to add new attributes to the presentation through the editor presentations tree that you can edit here. Okay. One other thing that was added in 3.0, and that is probably of some interest to some of you, that is some behavior that you would expect from these newly introduced attributes. For example, if I select a platform like, for example, Linux, and then the set of browsers that are available should be limited to the browsers that are really available on Linux. And if I switch back to Windows, for example, then I get the full list here. So there is now a mechanism to have dependent attributes. That means the value set, in this case, the value set of the browser attribute is or can be filtered based on another attribute's value. So the platform attribute determines what value set the browser attribute is using. And for example, if I specify maybe Safari, and I'm now switching to Linux where Safari is not available, then automatically this is flagged as an error because it should not be possible to assign a browser of Safari under Linux. How is this done? I'm going back to my customization page, to the types and attributes page, and if I'm looking at my attributes here, I'm just filtering now for the custom attributes because these are the important ones. Then you can see there are multiple additional columns that you can fill in per attribute. And one important column here is the value set column. So you can specify a mechanism to determine the value set of an attribute. And in this case, I have selected a mechanism that is called platform browsers. This is nothing that was built in, but I created that. And the mechanism behind this is that all the things that you can specify in these columns here, default value, calculated value, value set, and validators, are things that you can configure independent from the attribute and then reuse it for the attribute, for example, to determine the default value or the value set. And I will quickly show you how this is done. This is the attribute customization mechanism, and here you can see four entries on this left-hand tree here. These are the different types of customizations we support, and there is a mechanism called default values, calculated values, value sets, and validators. These are just type categories, and if you need a new one, just add an element. What I did here for value sets, I introduced a new platform browser dependency. So I created this thing just before this demonstration, called it platform browsers, because the semantic of this thing is to have a to filter the value sets of browsers based on the platform. Then you can configure this thing by picking the enumeration, the source enumeration, this is platform, and then the dependent enumeration, this is the browser attribute, and now you can just enumerate for the different combinations how the browser value set should be filtered. So you can do this for your own enumerations, for any kind of enumeration. In the future, it will be possible to have these dependencies not based on enumerations, but to have it on arbitrary attributes, even maybe attributes that get the value set from other sources from outside of RTC. So after having done this dependency configuration here, you have now available this platform browser thingy, and this can then be used in the browser attribute here as the platform browser value set. One important thing to note here is in order that this really works, there is one important column that you should not forget when doing these kind of things. if there are really dependencies between attributes, then you have to specify these dependencies. For example, if the browser attribute is dependent on the platform, then you have to specify this platform, the dependency here by listing the platform attribute. You would normally do this just by opening the edit dialog, and then here is the dependency section, and you can just add dependencies through all the other to all the other attributes that this value set, for example, is dependent on. Right now, there is only a single dependency, and there is no way currently to have, for example, a value set that can be calculated by other means. But there are mechanisms in the system that will provide support for example, scripting in the future. And if you have this, then you have maybe multiple dependencies to other attributes, and then you have to specify more than one dependency here.
Question?
Yes.
This is Fred again. Given this dependency feature, which is really nice, just curious, are there any restrictions on levels of dependency?
You mean that you have more than two dependencies between these enumerations here?
Well, given the parent-child analogy, more than one parent. Parent to child, let's say.
No, right now, I think behind the scenes, there's kind of a framework, and the implementation can do whatever it wants. And the architecture supports these kind of things. Right now, we surface this only in the UI with this mechanism that we call a dependent enumeration. So the UI here is the limitation, okay? So you can only express that one enumeration attribute is dependent on another, on the value of another enumeration attribute. That's kind of the limitation right now. But in the implementation, through mechanisms like scripting, it would be possible to have more complex dependencies that span or have more dependencies to more attributes or span multiple levels. There is no limitations in the architecture. There is only a limitation in the UI right now, in the configuration UI.
Okay.
Okay. So these are just a very brief introduction to work item customization, introducing new attributes. Other things you could do is using workflows. This, for example, is the workflow tab. And if I go back to the type definition here, then there was this workflow section where you can just pick a workflow and assign it to the selected type. And if you want, for example, to extend or create a new work item, type with a new workflow, then you would go into the workflow section, create your new workflow, which is basically a state transition map with from and to states, and specify the actions between these transitions, and then you could use that workflow in your own work item types. Or you can change existing workflows of existing work item types by adding, for example, new states and adding new state transitions. Again, as I said earlier, be careful when introducing or when changing things for work items that already were created in the database. So do not remove states if you have work items that are using these states. So again, there is a helping mechanism here on the right-hand side, this link that helps you to find work items that are using, for example, a given workflow. Be careful if you remove things like workflows or states within a workflow. It's always better to add things to a workflow that cannot do any harm to existing work items. Okay, so this was just a quick overview of the customization around work items, work item types, attributes, and workflows, and a bit about editor presentations. Then we have very limited support for approval trackings. for approvals. Approvals are not as customizable yet as work items. So the approval types and the states of approvals are built in and are currently fixed. But there is a mechanism that you can use to automatically connect approvals with workflow states. So you can have, for example, a mechanism that automatically, when all approvals were approved, nobody rejected something, that the end result of the approval will automatically do a state transition on the underlying work item. For example, to bring the work item from the closed to the verified state, if there was, for example, a verified approval. So there is a connection how you can automatically use approvals to trigger state transitions on the work item. But this is all customization that you have in that area.
Thanks, Andre. We just have to conclude the session here for now. Valerie, could you do the polling question?
Yes, ma'am. The question is, was this session useful to you? Press star 1 for yes, press star 2 for no, press star 3 for somewhat useful. Please vote at this time.
Will this presentation be available online?
I just voted.
Yes, it will be. We post them on the jazz.net event posting where I have a forum, and everything is listed there. If you want to just message me, I can link you.
Hey, Stephanie?
Yep.
Like you did before, is it possible we could get in a follow-up, a part two to this session? This has been very helpful, but, you know, I think there's a lot more areas and questions we would like Andre to cover, if it's okay with him.
I can work with Andre offline to try and arrange something. Definitely. Thanks, Fred.
A follow-up session or so?
Yep, definitely.
Okay.
Okay, this concludes the session for today. Thank you, Andre, for joining us, as well as all of you for participating. And join us in 2 weeks when we will discuss Calm with 3.0 Jazz products with guest speaker Carolyn Pampino. Have a great day, everyone. Bye.